So it is a little earlier than usual, but there is a lot going on in Israel. There has been a lot going on in Israel, that's for sure, over the past 24 hours. So for that reason, we have a Lieutenant Colonel in the reserves, Maurice Hirsch, on the line, and just a little bit earlier than normal. Maurice, thanks for being with us on Chai FM.
Hey, thanks for having me again.
I guess we have to start with Lebanon. I have a listener who wrote in just a few moments ago saying she's a little worried. There are sirens in the north. So much for the ceasefire, I guess.
Yeah, unfortunately, Hezbollah hasn't even attempted to maintain the ceasefire. They've continued on with their terrorist activities all the way through. It's something which encompasses all of their different classes of terrorism, whether it be terrorists on the ground operating still in the southern parts of Lebanon, whether it be firing UAVs and planning more acts of and more attacks. This is something which has been very, very clear. And when obviously when we say Hezbollah, we must understand that we are saying Iran. That is the that's the really the bond between them. Hezbollah acts at Iran's behest, at Iran's command. And so really what's happening is that Iran, even during the ceasefire, is continuing to attack us via and through Hezbollah.
So up until now, it appears that Israel's hands have been tied because America has required Israel to sit and do nothing. It looks as though perhaps following the death of a soldier yesterday, Idan Fuchs, it looks like Bibi Netanyahu has said, okay, you can take the hands out of the gloves now. He's attacking authorized attacks in the Bekaa Valley. Do you see this as being a significant escalation, and how is this going to affect what's going on between America and Iran?
So I think there's a few things going on at the, all at the same time, obviously. Because the subjects are intertwined. When you have President Trump that requested, told, let's be more direct
Instructed,
and
yes.
upfront, instructed Prime Minister Netanyahu to implement a ceasefire in Lebanon, so as to avoid giving the Iranians an excuse to not conduct any negotiations. Prime Minister Netanyahu saw exactly what was important. Dealing with and effectively with Iran obviously comes before Hezbollah. So he said, you know what, I'll take that hit, however publicly it was done. And so now I think President Trump is understanding that the Iranians didn't really have any bona fides intentions to actually negotiate anything. I think he's also getting entirely fed up with them canceling the trip of Witkoff and Kushner, and really all of those open discussions in Islamabad have been put aside. Yesterday, he said to the Iranians, "You've got between 3 and 5 days, and then all of your oil sources will be attacked." I think President Trump is getting to the end of his tether with the Iranians, and is therefore allowing a much more aggressive approach towards Hezbollah as part of that
Interesting.
understanding that where the danger lies.
It seemed to me that a couple of weeks ago he really was wanting to deliver an Israeli-Lebanese peace agreement. Maybe that is elusive at this point. It certainly, if you watch CNN, which I did last night, if you watch the clearing of southern Lebanon that Israel seems to have established for itself, that area between itself and the Litani, it's done significant damage to a number of Lebanese villages. It's just interesting because they fail to provide the context, the CNNs. I'm not surprised by that. I'm just surprised by how blatant it is. Here, the Israelis destroyers again, just destroying willy-nilly villages in southern Lebanon.
Unfortunately, that's just been the approach of some of the media all the way through to just depict Israel as a mindless destroyer. There's no understanding of what actually is being going on there, and there's also no reporting of the massive amounts of arms that have been exposed by the IDF soldiers in its operations in southern Lebanon, even in and we're not surprised, obviously, even in medical facilities in southern Lebanon. We've discovered Hezbollah weaponry. So it's something which hasn't surprised us at all. And again, the media isn't interested in telling the full story. Even when you're talking about an organization like Hezbollah, even when the Lebanese prime minister and president are saying, and other people are saying the problem is Hezbollah, they will always report that Israel is a mindless aggressor. And really not only taking out the context, but distorting entirely the reality.
Yeah, it's fascinating because you see a lot of social media on the various platforms these days, people in Lebanon being interviewed, predominantly Christians in Beirut, about the prospect of a peace with Israel. Most of them, by far, appear to be saying, you know, with Hezbollah out of the way, this wouldn't be an issue. But a number of them were saying, well, they're holding onto our territory, they're expansionists, they want to expand into Lebanon, and they want to annex Lebanese territory. It's just, again, interesting that they fail to see the reason why Israel is in there in the first place. It's just remarkable to me, but, you know, maybe I've got the luxury of distance.
I think many of the inhabitants of the Middle East have become very much accustomed to the same messaging that they've heard over and over again. Israel is trying to take over the entire area, to annex the entire area, to occupy the entire area, whatever adjective you want in there. And that's what they've heard over and over and over and over again. I think in some places there has been the understanding that's simply not true. When you're talking about the UAE, for example, the United Arab Emirates, that reportedly Mohammed bin Zayed had a conversation with Prime Minister Netanyahu, explained the situation that they've been hit by more missiles and rockets than by Iran, that even than Israel, and asked for assistance. And Prime Minister Netanyahu sent an entire Iron Dome battery the UAE with IDF soldiers. And Mohammed bin Zayed said, it's at times like this when you realize who your friends are and who your enemies are. And who are the people who just pretend to be your friends? And unfortunately, in Lebanon, where you have the makeup of the Shiites and the Sunnis and the Christians, I think the Christians quite well understand that Israel is not entirely the threat. The Sunnis are divided, and the Shiites are just following the Hezbollah-Iran line of Israel is a cancer that needs to be destroyed. So really, you've got that same messaging playing out into the different audiences around the region. And some of it is more positive and some of it is more problematic.
Is there any way that Hezbollah can be defeated militarily, or is there another way that they will have to be brought to heel?
So that's really the question, which is the same for Hezbollah, it's the same for Hamas, it's the same for any of these terrorist organizations. Can you entirely eradicate Hezbollah? Israel certainly cannot do that alone. That is not something that Israel can do, because that would require hundreds of thousands of Israeli soldiers going house to house in Lebanon to arrest and then prosecute these the Hezbollah terrorists. What it needs, and the same thing is in Iran, by the way, nothing will change in Iran simply as a product of aerial bombardments, however intensive they may be, however many infrastructure targets they may hit. What needs to be done is both Lebanon and Iran, the people of those two countries, need to take responsibility and say, we understand and we recognize who the problem is. It's not Israel, it's not America, and we're going to take our country back. The Lebanese government and the Lebanese army needs to take out Hezbollah as their national interest, not for Israel's national interest, for their own national interest. And unfortunately, they are bucking away and shying away from doing that.
I want to move on to a different story, one making big news last night, at least on Channel 12 anyway, and that is the unification of Bennett and Lapid into a new political party called Beyachad. And initial indications, not what they expected. Apparently, it strengthened Eisenkot and Netanyahu. What is going on?
I'm sure we've talked about this before, Simon. My understanding is that Naftali Bennett realizes that as much as he's tried to create this false reality of a wide base of support that's going to usher him in like a magic carpet into the seat of the prime minister, he realizes that there really is nothing behind that. And if he doesn't join one of the other leaders, then he will find himself really totally and utterly embarrassed on election day. And Lapid is experiencing a very similar effect. He's seeing and watching the country going more right. He's seeing and watching on the left-hand side, left center even, of the political map, more and more parties popping up, Eisenkot's party, even Benny Gantz's Kahol Lavan are a serious threat to them. So he's looking for that to join forces with the people or the person that he saw as a natural partner. And you had this with what they called in previous cycles the Brit Achim, the covenant between the two brothers, Lapid and Bennett. And really what you've seen, not only the failure to really rise in any of the surveys, but really the jokes that are being made of
really
them.
We haven't seen that here. Are the memes doing the rounds already?
Oh, they are demeaning them entirely. People questioning, well, it doesn't really matter what Bennett and Lapid do, because no one cares how the left wing divides up its votes.
World can you accuse Bennett of being left wing?
So I don't think he's left wing because I don't think he has. I don't believe he has any ideology. I think his only ideology is megalomania. I want to be the prime minister, and that's the I believe the unfortunate truth, because he appeared to have an ideology on which he was elected.
Okay, so I'm going to be
abandoned that entirely.
I'm going to be really honest with you and tell you where I'm coming from. I'm in anybody but Bibi camp. I belong there. I think after the 7th of October, there's too much to explain. He needs to go. Where does that leave me?
So I think that leaves you probably in tremendous popular company in Israel. I think there are a lot of people, and I'll tell you maybe where I am. I am not in the just not Bibi camp, but I similarly believe that Netanyahu, as prime minister, bears ultimate responsibility for the October 7 massacre. Yeah. And in a normal situation, I think that he should have retired. I don't believe it's going to happen. I believe that as long as he can, he will remain in power, which again won't be for so much longer. And then Israel will find itself looking for the next leader. I do not believe that it is either of the two previously mentioned gentlemen. I think that there are many, many potential candidates to replace Netanyahu, people who have gained experience over the last 15 and 20 years in the political environment, and people who actually do have an agenda, people who have a vision, principles. People who do
that's
have an ideology.
That's interesting. And there has been, there's been talk about Likud Bet. And I mean, I've been waiting for 2 years to see when is it that the Likud are going to wake up and say, hey, maybe this man is a liability and maybe there's a way to do things differently. They're losing touch with their base. This issue with the Haredim and the Hishtamtut and the non, conscription into the army. I mean, it's against their own base. It just makes no sense to me. No sense to me.
So the problem with that is that it's not a case that it's against their own base. It's a case of the Haredi, the ultra religious population in Israel, commands anywhere between 18 to 23, possibly even 25 seats in the Knesset, and really they are the balance of power. And so if they object to conscription, and you have an entire camp that says, I'm willing to sit with anyone like Bennett and Lapid. They're more willing to sit with the Arab parties than they are with Netanyahu. Now, if they would get over themselves, possibly we could create a government without the ultra-religious parties, and really make the changes that are necessary. But when you are closer to Mansour Abbas, the now whitewashed by Bennett and Lapid party that is connected to Hamas, it's a problem. That's where they lie. Just not Netanyahu, just not the ultra-Orthodox, but they have less objection to...
It's not as though they haven't been burnt by him before, though. It's not as though they haven't learnt their lesson with Netanyahu. It's not like they haven't tried previously. The man just doesn't stick by what he says he's going to do. Anyway, I'm looking at the time. I've got 5 minutes to go, and I do want to talk to you about something that is incredibly distressing for me to talk to you about, because I don't want to talk about it, and yet I feel, how can I not? And this is the issue of the violence that happened over Yom Ha'atzmaut, culminating in that awful death of that young 21-year-old kid in the pizzeria in Rishon LeZion. What are Israelis going to do about this?
We're in a very tough position in general. I think that our young population has suffered blow after blow after blow, starting with Corona, with COVID, and restrictions, social restrictions, hampering their social development. Mm. And now for the last 2.5 years, we've been in war.
Yeah.
This has a profound effect. As much as we are proud of our soldiers, and as much as we are really amazed at what that they've been doing, soldiers going to war has an effect on a society.
Yeah.
And it isn't a calming effect, unfortunately. And once you have a violence, it does spill over. And when you add into that what appears to have been part of this equation, what Israel, just prior to October 7th, Simon, I was dealing with the subject of how to effectively combat crime families. Israel has not a small amount of organized crime, and crime families that are involved in this violence. Some of it is no different from terrorism, blowing up cars on streets, shooting an opponent in public areas and killing passers-by. And unfortunately, that hasn't disappeared because of the war. To a certain extent, some of it has even intensified. And now it appears that those practices as well, combined with the lack of socialization through COVID and no school, together with the war, is having not a positive effect on the population. And that's something that we're going to have to deal with for a very, very long time. I would unfortunately possibly say that I'm amazed that incidents like this are so few and far between.
That's an interesting take.
And if we're not very, very careful, this could get worse. And that's what we need to be focusing our attention on internally, to ensure that the discussions are being held in schools, how to deal with these social situations. I don't think it's necessarily only unique to Israel. My wife actually sent me a sticker which she'd seen posted somewhere, that in the last, since COVID started, since March 2020, we have spent in Israel 78% of our time under social restrictions, whether it be COVID, Corona related, or whether it be war related. That's a long time. And that has a profound effect on our children.
I'm out of time. I've got to leave it there. It's such a shame. I wanted to continue this discussion. There was awful scenes outside the court in Tel Aviv with hostage families going at each other. I don't know. I think we care so much about Israel. Somebody with a lot of insight and responsibility needs to come and turn down the volume. Just turn down the dial on the political pilug, the separation between people in Israel, and really pull them together instead of pushing them apart. Not in a good space. But Maurice Hirsch, thank you so much for being with me this afternoon.